This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Australia's number one award-winning show for exploring sex, sexuality, and self.
Hide and seek.
Visit joy.org.au/hide and seek.
Good evening and welcome to Hide and Seek for another Wednesday night. This is your program for exploring sex, sexuality and self. Andrew the Apprentice here, along with Mr. Tim.
Good evening, I'm back.
You are back. You've been away for ages.
I know, I had a little hiatus.
I was away, you were away. Dean, look after the ship for a while.
Yeah, we all got sick of each other, didn't we?
We did. That's all right, we're allowed to do that every now and then.
There's a lot going on behind the scenes.
Not as sexy as you'd think, though, really.
No.
A big thank you to Fiona and Danae, who are those chicks talking footy here on Joy 94.9 every Wednesday night. Great little intro to the weekend of footy.
Now, I can't say anything on that because I don't watch it.
Okay,
much.
Fair enough. Now, we've got a big show planned.
Yes.
We have. You've organised it. Tell me what it's all about.
So, there's been a lot of discussion recently off the back of a documentary that was shown at the Melbourne Queer Film Festival called Chemsex.
Yes.
I don't know if everyone has seen it.
No. I haven't.
But there's certainly been lots of talk about it in the community, and bringing an issue to light, and that is drugs and sex, in particular the use of crystal meth or ice and sex and GHB. So we've got Stu Fenton, who's a psychotherapist and a drug and alcohol counsellor.
And many of our regular listeners from a few years ago would know that Stu used to join us fairly regularly through when we used to be 2 hours.
Wow.
Yes, this Hide and Seek used to be 2 hours.
Back in the day.
Yeah, so Sue used to join us about once a month or so.
Oh, have cool.
A chat. So, yes, he's used to us.
So all the gang's back.
Exactly.
So we're going to explore those issues. There may be some triggers for people during the show because we are going into some depth. So just to warn you about that. And obviously there are treatment options available if people need them.
That's right. Now, so Stu Fenton will be joining us very shortly. But Tim, we have got a couple of guests in the studio. We've got a couple of students joining us this evening.
Welcome.
Welcome. So, Daddy Steve.
Good evening, how are you?
Very well, thank you. And Ben.
Hi there.
Come forward, Ben.
Come closer. It's like an ice cream.
Ooh, okay.
Just don't suck on it.
So Ben and Stephen are doing the Taser Radio course at the moment. Ben's doing the Thursday nights,
class,
and
yep.
Steve's doing the Tuesday nights. Well, Steve, we know why you got on board, because Hide and Seek donated your...
You did, very kindly.
Yes.
Sponsored my position on the course.
That's right. As reigning Laird Leatherman, Hide and Seek does sponsor a spot on the Taser Radio course to let you learn some media training, essentially.
It's certainly been helpful so far.
And Ben, how did you get involved?
It was something that I was interested in doing for a while now. Yeah, just interested in coming to Joy and learning how things go here, meet some people, have some fun, play some music. Yeah.
Fantastic. So they're going to be watching us in the studio tonight, Tim.
They're going to be watching us like hawks. I better not stuff up.
I know. It's a bit scary. Big thanks to Stephen and Ben for helping us out there. So they're going to sit back for the rest of the evening and listen in and watch and see what we do. Because as I said, they're doing the Taser Radio course here at Joy. If you are interested in doing a Taser Radio, then head to joy.org.au/training, I think it is. And you can find out all about it there. But I hear on the grapevine that even the next courses are filling up very quickly. So make sure you get on board as soon as you can. Now, Tim, Mr. Stu Fenton will be joining us very shortly to talk about Chemsex.
Yes, he's in the hot chair tonight, and we're going to explore those issues. Who's doing it and why? What support is out there if you want to stop? And can it be done safely or not at all?
Whatever your tastes, you'll find it on
Hide and Seek.
Hide and Seek.
Hide and Seek.
Something for everybody.
This is Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9, your program for exploring sex, sexuality and self. Andrew the Apprentice here, also along with Mr. Tim. And this little trailer hit the studios, or hit the screens, late last year, and the movie's been doing the rounds of the world since December.
I'm coming to your house tonight.
Who's going?
Sexy boy.
I'm taking alcohol, man.
And what else?
That's it.
And what else?
Methadone.
These days, you come into London to find your gay life, and you find Grindr. And within perhaps four conversations, you're going to be introduced to chems. Within eight conversations on Grindr, you're going to be introduced to injecting or slamming.
And quite a few people may have seen that documentary. It's quite confronting and obviously features an issue that's happening in the London gay community. But it's certainly prevalent here as well. In the 2015 periodic survey, 35.3% of HIV plus gay men admitted to using crystal meth or ice, with 9.9% HIV-negative men admitting to using it as well. And 18.1% of people, gay men in particular, admitted to using party drugs for sex. So we wanted to explore the issues of chemsex, especially brought up by this documentary, which is certainly affecting our community here in Melbourne. And we welcome to the studio Stu Fenton, who's a psychotherapist and drug and alcohol counsellor. Stu, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Hi.
And have you seen the documentary yourself?
Look, I've had a look at snippets of it online, and I listened to a narrative online last night too that sort of included parts of the documentary on it. And I've seen quite a few similar documentaries as well, so I'm pretty familiar with the area, yeah.
And how does that fare in terms of what you've seen here in Melbourne?
Do you mean in the kind of work that I do?
Yes, or? In the work that you do.
Since I've moved to Melbourne, I've probably halved my caseload in terms of working with gay men. So when I was working in Sydney, my caseload was predominantly gay men, and it was, you know, it was fairly common. I have a number of gay clients at the moment, but. And it actually is a factor for them at the moment, combining drug use and sex. Yeah.
And what are the types of patients that you see now? Is it quite a mixture?
Yeah, I mean, I deal with all sorts of addictions, not just crystal meth. And, you know, like obviously with gay men, a lot of it is to do with GHB and crystal meth. But, I mean, I work a lot with codependency. I work with people with relationship problems. You know, a lot of my caseload at the moment is heterosexual men, strangely enough. But it's sort of just a mixture, really.
Right. And from the gay men that you do see, is it an issue that's on the rise, would you say?
It's a tricky thing to pinpoint, really, because, I mean, as you know, I'm a recovering drug addict myself, and I'm familiar with this aspect of gay culture as well. A lot of my drug use was around chemsex as well. So, I mean, I don't know if it's on the rise. I mean, I think it established itself, you know, maybe 15 or 20 years ago, this whole phenomenon. And I think in Australia it's sort of just maintained, that culture has maintained itself. What I do get the sense of is that it seems to be becoming much more prevalent in Europe and the UK. I mean, it was always a factor throughout the United States as well. So, I mean, if I had to take a stab at it, I would say it is on the increase because more and more people are getting introduced to the sort of the game of using drugs and combining it with sex and finding that it's very enjoyable.
So in the intro and the trailer, sorry, to Chemsex, they talk about getting to London and getting on the apps and then getting into drugs. Do you think some of the rise that you've perceived, do you think that's around the apps and the ability of our community to connect to each other more quickly?
I definitely would agree with that because, you know, even when I think about my beginnings in the gay scene, you know, the apps didn't exist, even the internet didn't exist.
Yes.
So, you know, the closest thing was to go out to a nightclub and hopefully get lucky with someone and, you know, if they offered you drugs. I don't even remember that actually a long time ago for me. I was just happy to get sex. But the apps and the internet and everything, I think they've just sort of fast-tracked everything, you know, that so people, you don't even, and this is what they say about nightclubs in Sydney and Melbourne, and it's not just in Australia, it's around the world, like those sorts of places are dying, and people are sort of just cutting right to the chase and using those apps to get sex. And I think the other part of that too is, and what I notice and what friends tell me, is that it's a very easy place to find drugs as well.
I was about to say, you see profiles with the PNP label, Party and Play, which, you know, obviously puts people quite upfront about putting that they're using drugs up there right smack back in your face.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I did notice in the bits of the doco that I looked at that the people who run those apps are trying to crack down on that, and they'll send warnings to people, you know, not to do this. But people tend to just get cleverer and make, you know, other sort of camouflaged names for it. And even in the intro to that documentary last night, another guy was talking about something I'd never heard of. It was something and hung, but it implied using drugs having sex. So yeah, I think that it's that's how it's sort of masquerading throughout that whole app culture, is letting people know I have drugs, or I want to party and play, and, you know, do you want to meet me there?
And what is it about these drugs in particular, I'm talking G, Tina, and how they've become so intertwined with sex for gay men?
Look, that's a really big question. And, you know, there's when you look at the history of gay culture, you know, we went through that whole phase where a lot of people died from HIV, and it was a very dark time, you know, 25, 30 years ago, and a lot of people died. And, you know, there's a lot of reports that say that the people that survived were very lonely. You know, you could lose up to 5-10 of your best friends at that time, and so turning to drugs was a way that people tried to cope with it. And, you know, even when the HIV meds that came into play in 1994 that started to save people's lives, you know, when that started to happen, I think that there had become a culture that those people who had HIV sort of went, oh, well, stuff it, I'm just going to party now until I die. And maybe part of the culture began there. And then I think there was a bit of a crossover where those people that had HIV and then realised they got this medication that was going to keep them alive had already started this behaviour of having quite desperate drug taking and mixing it with sex. And then that evolved again, you know, like into where crystal meth sort of came in around sort of, I guess, mid-90s to late 90s. And then I think it's just a part of the fact that, especially with crystal meth, it drops a huge amount of dopamine into your system, and it's a very clear, crisp high that you get. And I would even say there's a whole other element here, which is about gay men and internalized homophobia and growing up with a lot of shame and sort of the messages that they get from society. And a lot of gay men are just not aware of that. So then when you've got that original culture coming in, and then people carrying their internalized homophobia and their shame, using a drug that gives you a clear, crisp high and makes you feel really good about yourself and invincible and powerful, and it blocks out all those messages and all those, you know, being called a faggot or a sissy or a queer or any that kind of stuff. Crystal meth is an incredibly powerful drug to give you that opposite experience and to feel okay about yourself. And on the flip side, GHB, I mean, that's just an incredibly sexually intense drug. So combined with the act of sex just makes it explosive.
And talking about HIV for a moment, and you spoke about the whole plague of HIV and when people kind of came out of that era, went, okay, well, I'm just going to do it till I die. Now we've got PrEP.
I know. It's a whole new added element, isn't it?
What are your thoughts around that?
Well, it's so new, this whole PrEP thing. Like, you know, it's sort of amazing that I myself have come into contact with young gay men just in the last year where they've, you know, I'm HIV positive. So, you know, if I've gone home with them and I've said I do what I normally do and disclose my status, and these young guys have just said, it's okay, I'm on PrEP. And I just find it such a different world. I think what it does to this culture, though, is that people are sort of going, it feels to me as though people are going back to that original place where it was like, I can have as much sex as I want, I can have as many sexual partners as I want, I can do whatever I want, and there's not going to be any consequence to this. I don't know that that's a bad thing because I think it's important that people explore their sexuality and try and find, be comfortable with their sexuality, especially gay men, because we kind of get a message. I think we do get a strong message that our sexuality is wrong, or that's happened for a period of time. But I guess the one part of it that's obviously not good is that PrEP doesn't protect you from all the other STDs that you end up getting, and we know there's a rise of gonorrhea and syphilis and all those sorts of things, and that's only going to add to that.
We are on Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9. Now, Stu Fendon's joining us talking about, we're talking about chemsex broadly, and I suppose, as you've highlighted, some people are finding that some of these drugs they find enhance their sexual experiences, but obviously there's some downsides. So we're going to get into that very shortly. You are on Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9. You are on Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9. Andrew the Apprentice and Tim are with you. Tonight we're talking about chemsex with Stu Fenton, who does some counselling for others. Now, also, if there is anything that is concerning you tonight with what we're talking about, why don't you check out touchbase.org.au, which is a website that's run by all the age councils across Victoria, across Australia, including the VAC here in Victoria. And of course, the VAC has its own alcohol and other drug counselling service available on 1-800-906-669. But touchbase.org.au has got all the contact details of the organisations across Australia, particularly catering for our LGBTI communities. Tim.
So, Stu, we're talking about ICE in particular here and the link between ICE and sex. So, typically when you get someone come in and they've got that issue where they obviously have a substance abuse problem, but it's linked to the way that they have sex, how do you approach that kind of patient?
Well, I look at it as a double addiction. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're a sex addict, but what's happened is their chemical addiction has become fused with a process behavior, which is the sex. And, you know, sex is a very exciting and powerful, intense form of getting pleasure. And sure. So is taking drugs. So it's gay men are pretty clever in that they thought that they would join them both together. But, you know, and I can say this from personal experience, you know, because once you start having sex with drugs, it's very hard to imagine having good sex without it again. And this is a really difficult challenge that a lot of the clients that I work with go through. It's basically relearning how to have sex again. First of all, they have to stop using the drugs, because the problem is also that when they go back and use the drugs, then they're triggered to have to mix it up with the sex again. Or if they go and have sex and they want to use the drugs again, it's a bit of a catch-22. So the way that I generally work it is I try and refer that person into a 12-step program like Crystal Meth Anonymous or Narcotics Anonymous, where that they can get on top of the addiction first and try and contain it, get some sobriety time up. And then it's easier then to get an understanding of whether they actually are a sex addict or they've just been using it for the pleasure, because not everyone who has sex like that happens in that documentary is necessarily a sex addict. But, you know, and that was my experience too, because I thought I was a sex addict because I was having sex on drugs a lot of the time. And when I got clean, I stopped, my interest in sex lessened and lessened.
Right.
But then there's a whole new journey for a person like that to go on, where they have to relearn how to have sex again.
What was the point for you personally in regards to identifying that you needed to seek some support?
For the drug problem?
Yeah.
Oh, that was because I had really terrible drug-induced psychosis, and not everyone who uses crystal meth gets that. And so I couldn't use this drug in the end without going psychotic. And so, yeah.
And what are some of the other triggers or points for other people that indicates that they should seek some support?
Well, one of the really common ones with the clients I see is that their sex and the drugs dominates their life so much that they end up not turning up to work and they get fired, and then they don't have a job and there's no money coming in, and then they get kicked out of their apartment or the place that they're living with. And quite a number of them, you know, potentially end up on the street. So it's kind of like a domino effect. And the thing is that when you're really an addict by definition, the act of having the sex and taking the drugs obliterates everything else. You have no rational way of going, oh, if I don't turn up to work, I might lose my job. And then if I lose my job, I won't have a place to live and I won't have any food to eat and whatever. So, yeah, that's sort of how it happens.
So would you recommend to them to stop having sex while they're getting treatment for the drug issue?
You know what? There's a lot of people that would not like what I'm going to say, but you know, for me, I went to rehab for 10 months, 14 years ago, whatever, to do that. And I, you know, my friends confiscated all my sexual paraphernalia for a year and said, you can't have sex for a period of time. And when I look back, it actually was the right thing to do because every time I wanted, yeah, it was a total trigger. Every time I went to have sex or, you know, any sexual sort of form, it was so linked to GHB or crystal meth that then I would suddenly be triggered and want to use. So I definitely do say to a lot of clients, okay, first of all, you need to stop using the drug for a period of time. And abstain from sex for at least 6 months. That doesn't mean masturbation. You can do that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's better that you try and... Because there's a guy who's written a wonderful book called Cruise Control, Robert Weiss, and he calls this behaviour... It's a fusion. It's like those the two behaviors become fused together and they need to be separated and worked on separately.
And would you suggest that they delete apps, for example?
Absolutely, because apps are triggers. And, you know, this is the hardest thing with working with gay men because they don't want to let go of the apps.
No.
Because the apps are also tied a lot to validation and self-esteem. And, you know, there's quite a few gay men out there who struggle with their self-esteem. They've grown up in families and societies where it's not okay to be gay. And so they've taken a real bashing. So, you know, obviously when you get on the gay scene, you get a bit of attention. It's a bit of external validation. And the apps are the same. You know, you can put images on there that, you know, are the best images of you that you've ever seen. They can be images of you that are not even you, and you can get all this attention for yourself. So there's a whole lot of reasons why gay men are not going to want to give up their apps.
Certainly.
So there's one question that came up, and we were asking our Taste Radio graduates who are sitting here watching us. It's linked to what we were just talking about, but I guess many people might ask a simple question, you know, how much is too much? And you indicated before it's about when it's interfering in your daily life.
You know, the tricky thing with addiction is really a person has to be able to put their hand up when enough is enough and say, you know, now it's a problem. And the hardest part of that is that the people standing around them can often look at them and say, well, he's had enough. But that person might either be in denial or they might actually be quite happy doing what they're doing. So it really comes down to the individual to decide that.
What would you suggest to a social network around a person that is concerned about somebody's drug use? What advice would you give to that social network?
Look, I think if in an ideal world, they would go off and get some counselling and get some understanding of how to do an intervention or how to not enable their friend anymore, because a lot of people don't understand what codependence and enabling is. So, you know, when I this is the bulk of my work. I work with, say, parents and friends of yep. addicts and alcoholics, and I do a lot of work with those people, coaching them in, okay, you can't, like, let's say that person goes on a bender and they come home. You know, some friends wouldn't say anything about that. They'd be like, oh, Terry's gone on a bender again. He just needs to sleep for a few days and get his head back together and get back to work. I would say I'd be coaching them to say something more like, you know, when Terry's head's a bit clearer, Terry, I feel really worried about you, and I'm concerned, and you know, I've noticed that there's a pattern establishing itself where you're going on these benders and you're not eating and you're not sleeping and you're not looking after yourself and you're getting gonorrhea and whatever. I really want to support you and help you. Like, let me know how I can help you, or, you know, I've got some numbers here of rehabs or treatment centers. Are you at a point where you think this is a problem? Do you need to do something about it? So that you're cutting to the chase, because, you know, probably the worst thing friends can do is, you know, turn their back on it or ignore it or pretend it's not happening. You know, another thing that friends' social circles do is they enable it, and thinking that they're doing the right thing, like paying that person's rent or buying them food or whatever. That stuff actually makes things worse, because it actually gives that person unconsciously goes, oh, that's okay. Sally's always going to buy me meal and cigarettes.
Don't have to pay the rent. Yeah.
Exactly. And with the money that I save from wherever, yep. I can go off and use drugs.
So you're talking about friends and how they can support. Do you see couples where they've got that issue?
I don't actually see couples myself. I mean, on a few occasions I have, and it's a pretty sad thing when this happens, because generally in one of those couples, one is the really out of control addict and the other one has been, you know, their lover who has used drugs with them a period of time and has been able to pull themselves back. Generally in those, I'm thinking of a particular couple at the moment where they've tried to make this thing work for a period of time, but it's going down the plug hole really quickly. And I think ultimately if one person doesn't get clean, the other one has to remove themselves to protect themselves from that.
Sure.
You are on Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9. We're speaking with Stu Fenton. More of the discussion very shortly.
The Victorian AIDS Council presents Well, Well, Well on Joy, the show that's all about sex, health and well-being. Health and well-being. Well, well, well. Joy, 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 joy.
Monday nights from 8 p.m. on Joy and available via podcast at joy.org.au/well, well, well.
It's your program for expert advice, real stories, honest, informed conversations and unvarnished opinion.
So join us for Well, Well, Well on Joy.
Proudly sponsored and presented by the Victorian AIDS Council.
Joy 94.9, Hide and Seek on a Wednesday evening. Andrew the Apprentice, Tim with you, along with Stu Fenton.
And Stu is a psychotherapist and drug and alcohol counsellor, and we are discussing the issue of chemsex. And Stu, we spoke earlier about, you know, how much is too much. You may get those people that they just don't want to stop. So is there any harm minimization tips that you give them in those cases, or how do you generally direct those conversations?
Absolutely. Well, harm minimization is the main approach that the Australian government has implemented. Like, it's been in place for the last 20 or 30 years, and it is probably the one that most organisations are going to use. And I guess I myself find it tricky because I come from an abstinence background, but I definitely have had to use it in certain jobs. And I think the hardest place to apply it is simply trying to get a person to change their drug use. And it's just incorporating simple strategies like suggesting to them, okay, you make a designated weekend, which is going to be your blowout weekend for this month. You know, like, that's for someone who perhaps is blowing out every weekend. You suggest that when they do it, that they make sure that they've got clean injecting equipment if that's what they're doing, and, you know, that they've got condoms available and lube, and that everything is in place before they do it. And that also includes having, you know, Gatorades in the fridge and their fridge fully stocked up with food so that they can try and, you know, eat and drink and stay hydrated and practice safe sex if they need to in certain situations, and inject safely if that's what they're going to do in those situations. You know, the problem with GHB and crystal meth is that people get this really blasé sort of attitude once they're fully into it, and a lot of that stuff goes out the window. So trying to encourage them to put that stuff in place before they start the fun is probably the best way to go. You know, there's a lot of other aspects too to harm minimization that, you know, basically just include education. So there's a lot of that you can do in counselling, educating them about what crystal meth is and the effects that it has on you, and also in certain cases, you know, not if we're not just talking about meth and GHB, you know, because there are gay men out there who use heroin and other drugs, is educating them about the importance of learning about not injecting alone, making sure you're always with other people, learning CPR, all that kind of stuff.
And for those people, you spoke earlier about psychosis. Are there any tips that you can give people who might see someone going through that psychosis? Is there anything they can do to calm down the situation?
Well, that's a really good question, because, you know, I went through that experience myself many times, and the scary thing for people who are around someone who's in psychosis, because they're detached from reality, is they will often try and tell that person, no, that's not actually happening, Terry, you know, like. And I actually had a phone call from a client who was in psychosis just 3 days ago, and I'm getting really good at it now because I know it, because I used to do it. But he generally calls me and says, oh, they're waiting in the car across the street, and, you know, like, I'm reading the number plates on their car. And he's done this many, many, many times. And so I don't tell him that it's not happening. I just say, wow, that'd be really scary to imagine that was happening. And, you know, like, but I do want you to know that you're safe. And I really think that the best thing is if you could, maybe how far are you from home? Could you go home? Have you got any sleeping tablets there? Because, you know, if you're able to go home, I have a really strong feeling that if you're able to take a sleeping tablet and go to bed, that you'll wake up and this will all be over. Like, I try to choose my words carefully. I don't say it'll all be over, because when people have persecutions of delusion, delusions of persecution, telling them it'll be all over, their head will go just to, oh, someone's going to kill me. So I generally say, right, you'll probably get a good sleep and you'll wake up feeling really refreshed, you know, just have faith in what I'm telling me, telling you, trust me. So you've got to, you don't say to them, nah, that's not happening, because what that does is that really scares them, because they're so convinced that what they're seeing and hearing is real. So if you tell them it's not happening, it makes them more anxious. But you don't. You don't also add fuel to the fire. You empathize with them. That sounds really scary.
So it's about making them feel safe.
Yes.
And yeah, that you're not their enemy, I guess.
Exactly. Which is hard to do, because I know, because I've been in that state, I didn't trust anyone, and people would try and convince me to lie in the bed and take the, you know, the sleeping tablets, and I'd be just so suspicious, thinking they were giving me tablets that were going to kill me or whatever.
Yep.
So I have to say, it's a real art to try and engage with someone who's in psychosis and get them to do what you really want them to do that's in their best interest. You know, it might be enough just to get them to drink something or to eat something if you can.
Apart from the obvious things, I mean, psychosis is pretty out there. It's pretty obvious someone is under the influence of drugs. Are there warning signs that people can look out for if one of their friends is getting into problems?
As in psychosis?
No, as in getting into a meth addiction.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, there's lots of warning signs. You know, sometimes it's that they're starting to miss work. It's obvious things like they've got the bedroom door closed all weekend. You know, you go to see them and they're tapping away on their computer or their phone and they just don't pull themselves away from it. Yeah, just not showing up to work or not being able to pay the rent. You know, and not only that, it's the physical signs, you know, like someone's deteriorating, they've lost a lot of weight, they're sweating, they're coming home and they're gaunt, or, you know, There's a whole series of things that I think the problem is, though, you know, because I know that world really well, I can pick it up fairly quickly. But I think when people and flatmates are not familiar with that world, and there are a lot of flatmates out there who don't do drugs and whatever, and they'll be living with someone who's an addict, and they won't pick up on those things, you know, because the addict, of course, is going to say, oh, no, I've just been to the gym, or no, I've just started a new, you know, diet, so that's why I'm losing weight. And they will do everything to throw you off the scent. So it is tricky to try and pick up on those things.
Now, Stu, you've mentioned a couple of times you were an addict yourself and you've been through it. So I suppose what do you do to make sure that it doesn't happen again?
Look, I just work a personal program where I go to 12-step meetings still, not as much as I used to in the beginning. I'll go to 2 meetings a week. You know, I have a sponsor who I will talk to irregularly, like, you know, and I use a lot of consequential thinking, which is just simple. Like when I watched the doco last night, the opening of the doco showed a man injecting crystal meth, and it was incredibly graphic, the most graphic, and which is the way that I used to do it as well. So as I watched that last night, a little part of me was quite triggered back, like even though it's been nearly 13 years since I've used. But
what do you mean by triggered?
Well, they showed him pulling back on the barrel of the syringe and it going in, and they showed, you know, the physical look in his eyes, and all of that was very familiar to me. So when I witnessed that, there was a part of me that went, wouldn't it be great to do that again?
Right.
So, but in that moment, I was also able to use all the skills that I've learned over many years, which is consequential thinking. Well, I know that, like, an hour after doing that, I'd be completely psychotic and I'd be in terror, and, you know, like, I wouldn't get anything done for 3 or 4 days, and then I'd probably lose my job, you know. So these are the things that I've learned over years that I need to put in place to be a functional, rational human being.
Yeah, and so would you say that, you know, anybody who's going through an addiction at the moment can get to the point that you're at, or similar?
Yeah, I do believe that. I mean, obviously not everyone is going to want to choose abstinence. That's it is a challenging concept to say I'm never going to use a drug or any alcohol for the rest of my life. But then there are 3 different kinds of people that engage with drugs. There are drug users, there are drug abusers, and there are drug addicts. And I fall into that final category. And there are a number of gay men that do. Drug abusers are people that sort of get into trouble with drugs, and they have a ability, you know, to say, oh, this isn't working out so well for me. I need to pull back on this. And they can. And then drug users, they just never have a problem with it. They can use and also leave it. And so you just have to know what which category you fall into. I know well and truly I'm in this category, and I know what I need to do to not have to use drugs again. It's probably a little harder. You've got to identify where you are, because for some of those people, harm minimization will work and will work for a period of time.
If you want to find out more information, touchbase.org.au, which is the site, as we mentioned before, that has been developed by the VAC here in Victoria and ACON in New South Wales and all the other AIDS councils around Australia, have got an extremely detailed description of drugs and how to get to support and what you should be looking out for. So, and of course, as I mentioned before, the VAC here in Victoria has got alcohol and other drug counselling services. And 1-800-906-669.
They also have a group that meet weekly called Rewired.
So if you want more information, get along to that and check out touchbase.org.au. Stu Fenton, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
You're welcome. Pleasure to be here.
And Tim, that's about all we've got time for this evening.
Yes, thanks for having me again.
That's all right. You're supposed to be here every 2 weeks.
I know, I had a bit of a break.
And also,
I feel like I'm a guest tonight.
Well, I made you do all the work today. Now, we've also got a big thank you to our Taste of Radio graduates, Stephen and Ben, who are in the studio. Hope we pass the test with them. Coming up next is Andy with Black, White and Rainbow. Of course, a big thank you to our podcaster, David. David does all our podcasts here, and you can get along to see and listen to them at joy.org.au/hide-and-seek. Next week, Dean and I will
Rubber
be here.
Man.
Rubber Man. Now, if you haven't heard about this, make sure you tune in next week. In the first week of July is Mr. Rubber Melbourne. So,
first one.
The first ever, the Australia's first ever rubber competition. Wow. So, if you are interested in that, make sure you tune in next week to get all the details. But that's about it for us here on Hide and Seek. Until next week, you've been listening to Joy 94.9. Good night.
Good night.
You can subscribe to Hide and Seek's podcast for free. Visit joy.org.au/hide-and-seek for more information. Suggest a topic, a guest, or provide feedback. Email hideandseek@joy.org.au.
Hide and seek.
Hide and seek.
Hide and seek.
Hide and seek.
Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.